Well, you're just in time for what might be a very unhappy ending.
Catapulted propaganda. The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us. A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. The military industrial complex. This were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our bunker, everybody. Happy birthday, Mom.
Yes, and boy, it's getting close to Java's birthday, isn't it?
Today is her birthday. She's 5 months old.
Yes.
She was born on December 23rd.
Java the pup turns 5 months old today, and she celebrated by biting Murphy, biting me.
Biting my shoes.
Biting your shoes.
And biting her time.
And well, it's all in all, I've been a very pleasant day here in St. Louis. We look outside. It's gorgeous weather here. We've been blessed with blue skies and very moderate temperatures, and it's hard to believe that the world is going to heck in a handbasket.
It is hard to believe, and I will say this. We did not feel any of the earthquake that occurred at the New Madrid Fault Zone right on the Mississippi River at 4:04 and 33.
Local time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Took place this afternoon, May the 23rd of 2006, just a few miles away from the town of, town of Tiptonville, Tennessee, just a little northwest of there, a little southeast of a town called Hayward, Missouri.
Now, mind you, it was only a 2.5 magnitude,
yeah,
but
still. Called a microquake.
Yeah. Anything under a 3 doesn't really register on most people's. But, you know, the New Madrid is something to keep an eye on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just to kind of place it at about 90 miles upriver from Memphis and about 155 miles downriver from St. Louis. And according to the map, it's right smack in the middle of the Mississippi. And that's where that New Madrid fault zone lies.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to go someday, but not today, thankfully.
Not today. Well, you know what? There is a story out today that I'm going to get to in a few minutes, but I have to say it is one of the most disturbing stories I've heard in a while. Now, after teasing you with that, let's go to the map. No, actually, there's another story I want to address first. It's actually Top of the Pops here on WatcherMagazine.com. The very top story right now is about the possible human-to-human transmission of H5N1 in Indonesia. We talked about this almost a year ago with Henry Nyman of Recombinomics.com. If you want to go to the archives and listen to that show, I recommend it because he talked about a family group in, was it Vietnam at the time? That he felt probably was human-to-human transmission.
Right. And one of his most recent commentaries at his website, Recombinomics.com today, points out that technically we have been at a phase 4 alert level, a pandemic phase 4 alert level since early 2005. It's just that the World Health Organization has not wanted to admit it.
Now, I will say that Steve Quayle talked about this today, and I think he made an interesting point in that the head of the WHO died.
Yes. Now, he was
suddenly.
61.
Now, he was 61.
61
but frankly,
years old.
That's not all that old.
No, it isn't. And Steve just flat out said during his program tonight that he thinks that the gentleman was just flat out taken out. Dr. Lee was taken out. Considering that
Dr. Lee Wook.
It's Dr. Lee Jong-wook. Lee would be
Jong-wook
his surname.
Jong-wook would be his first name. That's
correct.
Right.
So Dr. Lee just developed a sudden blood clot on his brain, which, again, at the age of 61, it's not outside the realm of possibility.
No,
but as Steve pointed out, in the world of black ops or wet work, if you will, that it's not that difficult to create something like this, whether by drugs or even through electromagnetic means. So
that's right. Well, you know, if he went because that was just his time, then that's fine. But if someone took him out, that stinks. And it probably means that if that's so, he was opposing whatever's going on.
Right.
That he wanted to be a little more honest, perhaps, with the public. Because human-to-human transmission has been going on for over a year. It's just not efficient human-to-human transmission.
Right.
Which means that it's a little tough.
Right. It's very virulent, but then I realized that wasn't the word I wanted. It's very deadly.
It is deadly. That's true.
The cases that there are making the news today coming from Indonesia deals with a family cluster of seven people, six of whom have died, mm-hmm. if I understand the story correctly. That is a very high case fatality rate, much higher than you typically get with an influenza.
It is.
The Spanish flu of 1918 had a case fatality rate of about 5%, and it killed 50 million people worldwide, possibly mm-hmm. as many as 100 million. So a case fatality rate of whatever 6 out of 7 is.
A lot.
Yeah, would be unbelievable, but it is in a form that is not easily transmissible human to human. If it trades off some of its mortality for an easier transmission rate, mm-hmm. then you've got recipe for disaster. Because even if the case fatality rate is 10%, you know, which doesn't sound like a lot, just remember, if it's easily spread, the Spanish flu only had a case fatality rate of 5%.
Now, bear in mind, if you go back in the old stories, and again, listen to the archives, listen to our shows from last year, with Henry Nyman, N-I-M-A-N, mm-hmm. and it's from Recombinomics.com. You'll find his website, and he comments on the news every day. But you'll find our stuff is from about a year ago. He mentioned at the time, and frankly, at that time, it was still considered good science to say that bird-to-human transmission did not occur. Mm-hmm. It had to go through a mixing vessel like a pig.
Right.
And we had a show, and I think the show was called Pigs and Pagans, actually,
right, uh-huh.
that we talked with him about that. And he was saying something that I found very disturbing at the time, and I still think about occasionally, and that's that there was a scientist in South Vietnam, I believe, who was taking a look at all of the pigs who were involved.
South Korea.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I kept thinking Vietnam doesn't sound right. And that those pigs could be traced back to a supplier in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And what's more disturbing is that the genetic sequence of the flu that was isolated from their lung tissues was showing strong similarity to a strain that had been isolated from the Spanish flu and had last been seen in the late 1930s at a laboratory in London, England.
Exactly. And this scientist was being told he was mistaken.
Mm-hmm. And he
was corresponding with Dr. Nyman.
That's right. And Dr. Nyman told us that this gentleman did not like being told that he didn't know what he was doing.
No.
And we're not sure whether he's published that paper that he was working on or not, but we did a show with Dr. Nyman about this and about the appearance of Spanish flu virus in pigs in South Korea. This mm-hmm. was, again, a year ago. And at that time, Dr. Nyman was saying, we are seeing transmission within family clusters. And now here we are a year later, and finally, the World Health bureaucracy is beginning to recognize that what he was saying is correct. Mm-hmm. And just at this time, again, interestingly enough, the head of the World Health Organization, the gentleman responsible for leading the UN's fight against avian flu, develops a sudden brain clot and dies.
Mm-hmm.
We would not put on the foil hats about this particular death were it not for the timing. Number one, the corresponding cases coming from Indonesia of human-to-human transmission of H5N1, mm-hmm. and the fact that to this date there are something like 72 or 75 other microbiologists and geneticists that have died.
Oh, I think it's more like 87. It's over 80.
Have died unnatural deaths.
Mm-hmm. Or they've just disappeared.
Yes.
Let me remind you, too, because one of the jobs that we feel is it's incumbent upon us to do is to connect dots. That's something, frankly, we don't focus, fine-tune on any one issue. Our guests do that.
Right.
And we thank them for it. We're just frankly not capable of doing that. That's not how our brains work. Our brains work to step back and look at what other people are investigating and then just start to connect them together. I think it was around last fall, there was an epidemic, a localized one, in China, that they were calling a mysterious flu-like illness, but it had a hemorrhagic component.
And then they tried to blame it on Staphylococcus, didn't they?
They did. They tried to blame it on,
or strep. Streptococcus.
It was strep, and I think it was pig strep or something yes. that they were blaming it on. it's just sort of fell off the map after a while. But as I recall, hundreds were affected in this very small area. And then we see stories in Europe about cattle that are suddenly dying and they have sores all over them. And the reason I'm even bringing this up is because it looks to me, and you can find stories like this all over the web, over the last few years, but especially over the last year, you and I have really been looking at it because we're doing this ministry. It seems like there are test cases taking place. And one of them, frankly, I would say probably was the Marburg epidemic last summer.
In Angola, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, and as you recall, the people there were attacking health workers in UN vehicles
because
when they came
they
to help because they claimed that it started with a vaccination program. And, interestingly enough, strangely enough, the first victims were children, which is not usually the case in an outbreak of this type.
Exactly, and they had been over there vaccinating children.
Right.
So, once again, if you have not seen The Constant Gardener, go rent it. Well, we're going to say enough for that about that for now because there are other stories in the news. And here's the one I teased about a few minutes ago. This, a listener sort of clued me into this story. I had missed it. And apparently the listener sent an email about this yesterday.
Yes. And I
didn't get it. If you,
I don't remember seeing it either.
No,
so Robert, thank you for sending it again.
Well, and that's what I told Robert. I said I really appreciated that. We have missed getting emails off and on, and I'm not really sure why it is. But I mean, when Derek and I, neither one of us, if it's to both of us, and neither one gets it,
sometimes
that's
we
really.
Yeah, and then sometimes they get here and they've been steamed open and sealed shut again.
Those emails,
pretty
I hate
obvious.
That. Yeah, dirt all over them. Now, this is a story that is just shocking, and I didn't see anything about it on Fox today. If I missed it, let me know. But apparently, a mid-level worker at the Veterans Administration took home his or her. I can't find that it says man or woman. I'm just going to say his to make it simple. Took home his laptop along with a bag full of disks to, quote unquote, work on his assignment, to do some work at home. Then his home was broken into.
Right.
And the laptop and a CD from the bag, now the entire bag may have been taken, but anyway, a CD that was in the bag that contained the personal information of 26.5 million veterans.
Yeah.
Everybody who has been released, discharged rather, since 1975 was in there. And we're talking Social Security numbers.
Right. Addresses, birth dates, possibly even veterans who served and were discharged prior to 75, but certainly everyone since 75. This is really suspicious that this guy was allowed to leave the VA with this information to begin with. And
exactly.
Then to have it stolen, in quotey marks, really smells like somebody...
Oh, this story reeks.
Yeah.
So what is the deal? Because there have been... Over the last year, and I say the last year only because over the last year, you and I have been doing this show. And because of that, we have been paying much more attention. We've had our wall of paranoia. We've been connecting dots like crazy. Excuse me. There have been so many stories of lost data.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. We lost about a million credit card numbers at this bank. I'm really sorry about that.
Right.
Oh, apparently someone hacked in and got this. I just find it really hard to believe in this day and age where you can spend $100 and buy some software that will protect your data.
It is really, really bizarre. And again, you'd think just basic protocol would dictate that this information just never, ever left the building.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm just shocked. Again, mid-level employee, someone who is crunching numbers...
Somebody you ought to know better.
Oh yeah.
Well, here's the thing, and we've talked about incidents like this before as being small nudges in the direction of a nationwide RFID implant program. How do you protect your personal information when it's been stolen?
Right.
How do you protect your information when we can't guarantee that credit card companies can keep your data secure? How do we verify that these guest workers are really going home every night and crossing the border again? We make sure that everybody in the country has an RFID implant, not just guest workers, not just people waiting for the green card, but everybody.
That's right.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something else. There are a number of populations in the United States that are extremely vulnerable when it comes to implementation of an RFID tag. School children.
Mm-hmm.
School systems, states, the federal government have certain requirements, mm-hmm. health requirements, when it comes to school kids. And they have lots of requirements.
Right.
We'll just deal with the health. I'm sorry, but your child can't register for school, can't attend that first day mm-hmm. until little Johnny has his RFID chip.
And I don't think it's any coincidence that one of the technologies that was promoted by the Department of Health and Human Services, gosh, I think it was not last fall, but a year ago in the fall, they held a big conference of technologies that were going to really benefit Americans in the 21st century, and RFID tags, RFID implants was mm-hmm. one of those.
Mm-hmm.
The health benefit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and safety. Another population that is very vulnerable, veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Veterans have to jump through hoops
yep.
to be able to get the health care that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And once they do get the health care, they are in a veteran hospital.
Well, take it even a step back. How do you identify how do you identify someone on the battlefield on the battlefield?
That is true. Again, anyone in the military, you're right. The military is a huge group.
Right.
And of course, we know that they get vaccination trials all the time.
Right. This would be one way to guarantee that they could identify anybody who'd fallen victim on the battlefield, regardless mm-hmm. of how bad the wound, whether or not the dog tags had been blown away. Hey, you know, why worry about the dog tags? You've got the RFID chip. As long as they can find it with a scanner, they can identify mm-hmm. anybody. And, hey, we can also make sure that if you've got any special allergies in there, even though you can't talk.
That's right.
Whether you're a veteran or anyone else.
We don't want to give
imagine you're in a car accident and you can't speak for yourself. Yeah, this is how it's going to be sold. And this loss of information may be one more brick in that wall.
Oh, yeah. And there are other groups, people in mental institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we're seeing, guest workers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they could probably make an argument for anybody who's receiving federal assistance of any kind or state assistance.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to qualify for this, in fact, if you want to get your weekly unemployment check,
mm-hmm. you need to have that RFID tag.
Exactly, yeah. Because we need to know you are who you are. Because you know what? We just had an awful lot of information stolen,
yeah.
and you could be saying you're him. You've got a social security number. You could have made that up.
Exactly. Hey, if you want your parking verified after eating at the restaurant.
That's right.
That's
but we do have the original
yes.
record, so we know that Sergeant Smith, you who were discharged in 1984,
mm-hmm.
that we know we've got your fingerprints and your blood type and everything on file.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'll just come in, we can verify that. And so this never happens to you again. We'll just chip you.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on, before we get to part two of our interview with Dave Duncan tonight, a very interesting story from the News Times. The folks at AccuWeather, based on temperatures out in the North Atlantic, are predicting a big hurricane season. Now, not just a big hurricane season for America in general, but they are actually predicting that New England stands a very high chance of getting hit with a big storm this year. This is interesting because one of the Disaster of the Week films that have been airing on the Discovery Channel over the last couple of months.
And on the Weather Channel.
And on the Weather Channel is a film that shows what might happen if New York City were to get plastered with a Category 5 hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's never happened. Not ever. The closest they came was the famous Long Island Express in 1938.
Right. And then there was the Perfect Storm in 1991,
the Perfect Storm,
I think.
Which didn't quite make landfall, but it was a monster storm.
It was a pretty big storm.
It was. They had breakers at the seawall in Massachusetts, someplace in Massachusetts, that were like 100 feet in the air. But for some reason, according to AccuWeather, a buoy 200 miles off the New Jersey coast is registering a water temperature of 70 degrees, this was in mid-April, at a time of year when normal temperature is about 42. That is a huge difference.
That's a huge difference. Well, in fact, you and I were talking about this today. Last night when we were eating, we went out to dinner last night. Oh, we had a great time. We actually don't do that very often,
no,
which is why
don't.
It was memorable. Not that every day isn't memorable with you, honey. Because it is. We were actually talking about this last night because I had gone on the NOAA website yesterday just to take a look at sea temperatures. I was curious to see what was going on in the Gulf because we are coming up on June 1st. Mm-hmm. That's the beginning of the hurricane season. And I thought, you know what? It wouldn't surprise me if June 1st, bam, there's that first one. Mm-hmm. Agnes or what? I haven't looked at the name list. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the A is going to be this year. But while I was there, I thought, okay, well, they're a little warm, 26, 27 degrees Celsius. I thought I'll go ahead and take a look at the Atlantic. The Atlantic was 26, 27 degrees Celsius.
Which is bizarre.
Wait a minute. That makes no sense. How can the New Jersey waters be as warm as the waters off of Florida? That makes no sense at all.
No.
So, Weather Wars comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. This is really bizarre. As damaging as devastating as the storms were that hit the Gulf Coast last year down at New Orleans and just narrowly missing Houston. Imagine what would happen if Washington, D.C. took a Category 4 or Category 5, or New York City, or Baltimore, or Boston, any one of those cities. And, of course, there are big ports elsewhere along the coast like Charleston, South Carolina. Baltimore is a big seaport. Of course, New York City is a very big seaport. Newark. What if all of these dire predictions are predictive programming to get us used to the idea that something like this might happen, and it's, even though it's weird, it's perfectly normal, mm-hmm. just a little odd.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and by the way, just in case something does happen so we can identify your body, would you please be chipped?
That's right.
No, seriously, they were saying that if only they'd had chips they could have identified everybody.
Yeah. And slowly, by the way, they're working at nudging that official death count from Katrina up there. It's now up over 1,500, which
I know. They keep adding.
Yeah, 50% higher than it was last October.
Well, to be fair, they weren't counting the people who had gone to other states.
Huh? Yeah, that makes no sense.
Wait a minute. Let's see. If you got out of the way of Katrina and you went to another state,
It doesn't count if you die out of state.
He was in a car crash. He died.
Yeah, what? Makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't quite understand that. But anyway, all of that, as far as the possibility of a big Category 5 hitting the East Coast, I think that fits into prophecy nicely, don't you?
I would think so. Storms and rumors of storms, wasn't that in there somewhere? No, I guess not.
It's wars and rumors of wars, yeah. But I'll tell you what, weather, that's pretty awful.
And that's the question, weather or not.
That's pretty awful, too.
Well, the big question...
I'm glad our guest isn't awful.
No. I'm thankful that we've had the opportunity to talk with Dave a couple of times and proud to call him a friend, actually.
Actually, pray for him. He's been going through some flu and other things. And nothing creepy. No mm-hmm. kind of... It's not,
You haven't been touching any birds, have you, Dave? No. Dave posed a very interesting question, and this is what he's exploring during the course of this three-part interview. Is there a massive psyops underway to convince Christians that something big is going to come in 2012? Now, it may be that something really is going to come in 2012, mm-hmm. but Dave raises the very interesting point that we need to be aware of and alarmed by the fact that the expectations many Christians hold of the year 2012 are beginning to mirror those of New Agers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who have very different goals in mind.
Exactly. So we are going to let you hear the second part now of our interview with David Duncan.
We continue as we left off yesterday talking about the Judeo-Masonic imperative. Dave, can you explain a little bit further what you meant by that?
Well, you know, this is an archetype that, like we just were saying, it just goes back for thousands of years. And it's just absolutely central to, it's as central to the Masonic legends is the temple itself, and you know, all of this is describing a future event when apparently a son of a widow will be raised back to life, and I think that there's reason to believe that it would be the false prophet that would do this act of raising back to life. And so clearly these two figures in our future are going to wrap up a lot of history.
You know, years ago, I had a family member, I won't say who, he's no longer in our family, but I was actually helping him, believe it or not, to memorize the order of events for his Masonic ceremony to go up in another level. And, of course, the Blue Lodge is the first three levels. He was in the Blue Lodge. I don't know that he ever got past it. But I was reading through these things with him, and I said, what on earth are you doing? And, of course, our preacher was preaching against it and this and that. And he said, and he meant it when he said it, Dave. He said, oh, this thing of the guy dying and then come back to life, because he was having to reenact it. And he said, oh, that's just Jesus. And I said, I don't know about that. And he says, no, that's what it is. And at those lower levels, and we've said this before, the lower level Masons aren't told.
No, they're kept in the dark.
Exactly. So they really are told that this is something that does not conflict with their Christian faith.
And clearly,
so if it's not Jesus, who is this?
Well, Hiram Abiff is a myth and an archetype, but we pointed out that goes back to the Egyptian myths of Horus.
And back to Babylon.
And as we've discussed with Peter Goodgame, there are good, very good reasons to believe that the myth of Osiris is merely a retelling of the life and death of Nimrod, the biblical Nimrod, who, of course, was the one constructed the Tower of Babel and got into such trouble. And Dumuzi, or Tammuz, for whom the widows in the book of Ezekiel were weeping.
And I remember just a few months ago, we listened to Peter's interviews, and then, boy, my ears were perked up when he was talking about the fulfillment of this archetype. It goes back a long ways.
It does. But as we look forward, we're going to see that things come full circle again. One of the years that keeps being mentioned as prophetically significant, the Mayans saw it, and we're seeing other signs and symbols and clues that the year 2012 is somehow significant. Do you attach any significance to that year?
Well, I sure do, especially since reading David Flynn's articles that were published by Tom Horn at the Raiders site this last year. You know, I think that was really one of the major publishing events on the internet for the year 2005.
We totally agree with that.
That was some amazing research.
We'll provide a link to that just in case you haven't read it.
Yeah, and anybody who hasn't read this series of articles really should go to Tom Horn's Raiders and find that. In fact, page one of my site, the link is provided to that too,
so people can
find it that way too. So, at any rate, let's just skip, rather than recount all of David's findings. I think that would take up more time.
Oh, God bless you if you can.
I was just going to try to skip to the bottom line conclusion, and I'll let people read David's work at their own leisure. But at any rate, the bottom line conclusion, quote, according to the message at Roswell, we have only to wait a few years, unquote. David's deciphering of the code inherent in the Roswell event suggests that the gods of old will come down to earth again, as they did so many ages ago, again in late 2012. And this appears very clearly to be the message that David Flynn found encoded in the events of Roswell in 1947. Well, I guess I'd have to ask then, should we believe the UFO entities in this information that they have encoded, that we now have become aware of? Should we expect them to come down to dwell among us in 2012? Or should we be concerned that they are up to mischief in suggesting this, so as to set us up for a delusion regarding a topic that is just absolutely critical importance, and that is, just what is the timing of the events surrounding the second coming of Jesus Christ? And I think both Tom and David address this in at least a tangential way, the question of whether we should believe their message so carefully encoded or not.
Right.
So I'm not breaking any new ground here.
That's very sneaky, but because you'd think that just by deciphering the code, as David appears to have done, you think that you've come across with the answer. But as you point out, it may well be that this is disinformation designed to throw us off the
trail. Oh, exactly. And, of course, without going too far astray, I hope, we're seeing this in film and television, the show The X-Files. That was the major theme throughout the series, each year. The big backbone story was that these aliens were coming. They were already here. They were cloning. They were messing with our DNA. But more than that, they were planning on actually taking over the Earth in December of 2012.
Yeah,
and
right.
To set that up, we had spaceships that were covered in literature from every religion on Earth because it was promoting panspermia.
Sure, right. Well, you know, there's so many ways. The Bible urges us to be on the lookout for angels who would deceive us at the end of the age. And this leads us to a paranoid mindset. But, you know, I suspect God wants us to be paranoid about deception, about spiritual things, about the coming of his kingdom. And issues related to the timing of the end of the age certainly can be a fertile soil for misconceptions to grow. And, you know, thinking about all these things, I remember Ronald Reagan when he urged us to be wary of an invasion from space.
Yeah, that's why I took that sound clip and mixed it into the new intro music that we use.
Yeah, and you mentioned this on your show just a couple days ago, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, clearly the record supports that Reagan was an Illuminist.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, the Illuminists are urging us to fear evil aliens from space. And so what if this is built up into an attitude that culminates in all the militaries of the world gathering in Israel, not too far from Mount Hermon, so as to fight off the second coming of Jesus Christ?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like Star Wars to me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It kind of does.
It really does, and it's just so backwards. It's saying that there will be, that the Messiah is coming. In fact, he's already here. He just hasn't revealed himself yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's this other being coming who is an evil alien.
Mm-hmm.
When he
right.
gets here, whoa, yeah. We better all fight him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I could point out some sites on the Internet that have photographs of, well, for instance, what happened to one Brazilian man. There are some horrendous things that have been done in the way of butchering people up that have been attributed to aliens.
Now, you're not going to be able to slip that by. You're going to have to explain what you mean by that. Our listeners are going to write to us. What are you
talking about? What happened in Brazil?
So let me send that to you in an email.
Okay.
That way
we can answer.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. So anyway, it appears there may just be an enormous scam that's about to happen that would precondition people to fight against invaders from space. And this surely could happen in 2012. I am just sounding the alarm that should be visible to everybody, that the New Age expectations about 2012 are suspect. And what really worries me is to see Christian expectations about 2012 beginning to mirror the New Age expectations. That worries me. So I'm saying that the potential for scam relating to the timing of the second coming of Jesus Christ is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be some pretty heavy trickery going on to get the whole world to resist the second coming. And that's what happens at Armageddon. That's what Armageddon is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, two things it's about. It's about wiping out the remnant of the Jewish people, and it's about fighting off the return of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And for the world to be involved to the extent that it will be, obviously, from the Bible, it's got to take some pretty heavy deception.
Well, you know, if the Antichrist is going to be successful, and it's clear that he does fool a lot of people, he's going to have to claim he's Christ, and he's going to have to fulfill the prophecies of the Messiah.
Sure. You bet. And it's going to be done purposefully. Let me just say this and leave it at that. I tend to see the door as being open to a whole variety of possibilities about the timing of the second coming. And I am not married to any one particular view, but I've explored a number of views. And I personally think that the range of possibilities is greater in scope than what we usually are taught. Daniel is still a sealed book, and it's sealed until the end time. And we're awfully close to the end time, but we're not there yet. And so for me, interpretations of Daniel that originate in the 1800s seem to me to be suspect. God wouldn't say that it was a sealed book if he knew that someone would come along and break the code before its time. And God knows all of everything in advance because he is able to visit any time he chooses to visit. He's free to move in that dimension.
Mm-hmm. That is very true. I often say that I'm pre-trib, but I'll go whenever he gets here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is the one thing that we'll be completely and closed-minded about, is that there is just one way.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he shows up and I'm not expecting him, I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah.
No,
wait a second. You're early.
Oh, you're late.
Well, anyway, I'll move this along to the next topic. You know, as I detailed in my first website, the New World Order scam, a long time ago, I was a hippie in the Haight-Ashbury, and I learned some very shocking things about the plan that few people have ever known about. And I presently cannot help but recognize the relevance to Bible prophecy of what I learned back in those days. So some months ago, I created that first website to communicate these things, New World Order scam. I had an opportunity in San Francisco back then to learn occultism from the ground up from an occult adept who I met in San Francisco back then. And no one, as far as I'm able to see, has ever published at least some of the details of the plan that Alan Noonan talked about. I don't want people to think that I'm praising Alan or a cultist, but I think I do need to communicate these things that I learned because of the relevance of them to Bible prophecy. And I think some of these facts need to come out about how occultists envision the end of the age coming down.
Now, isn't Noonan still alive?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's an elderly man now, but yes, he's still alive.
Yeah, in fact, I see he just began podcasting. Not that I want to direct people to his podcast, but...
Yeah.
He's still out there and presenting himself as a messenger from the coming Space Brothers.
Well, you know, I got to thinking, and I put together a long list of things that he had described about the plan in my first website, but there was one thing that I realized later on that I'd forgotten, and one thing that he had emphasized and said many, many times, and this was really important to his eschatology. And he always said that the end of the age would be kicked off by a planned artificial tribulation.
Mm.
And for Alan, this concept was really a critical part of the plan. And there are a lot of people right now who understand that the plan is to try to counterfeit the Second Coming, to hijack it, and to try to bring it to fulfillment in their way, to con people into thinking that the stage show that they're about to create is the fulfillment of the biblical prophecies. Mm-hmm. About the end of the age. And I've said before, I believe the fake Jesus will be a much better clone of the real thing than people suspect. Mm. The Bible says Satan will come as an angel of light, not as an angel of obvious blackness, or in other words, overt evil.
Right. I think the movie presentation of Satan as this horrifying embodiment of pure evil is way off the mark.
Yeah, it's
probably
way off the mark.
Deliberately so. Yeah.
It's not going to look that way. It's going to be an angel of light.
Oh, yeah. It's like telling your kids, beware of strangers. And in their mind, a stranger is, you know, got two horns and a tail and they're really evil looking.
Uh-huh.
But the stranger that they actually aren't expecting is a really nice old lady.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the people who've written about the Roman Church and about the smoke of Satan and all these things, you know, it has seemed to me that all of this has come to light just simply to be or to act as a contrast agent, that the angel of light will appear most bright against this backdrop of blackness. How best to paint white except against black? And so obviously the Roman Catholic Church has deemed it appropriate for it to go down in shame. I mean, you know, we look at all of the sexual shenanigans by the priests, and you have to conclude that it's intended to be this way. It's the plan for the Roman Church to go down in shame. It's discrediting of Christianity, even if not in our version of Christianity. The world is unable to see it to that depth.
Mm-hmm.
So we are dealing with the counterfeiting of the Second Coming, and it is to be kicked off with a planned artificial tribulation. And there is just so much that we know now that I did not know back when Alan was teaching these things about the planned artificial tribulation that the occultists intend to bring about to kick off the end of the age. And in particular, I'm thinking about the fact that scalar technology exists that can create and steer hurricanes. Well, last summer, the Synagogue of Satan, Government of Israel, was sponsoring a program of destroying the Jews of Gaza and this evacuation, this destruction of them and their homes and their lives in the summer of 2005 is just absolutely unparalleled in Israel's history. And then very soon after this, whammo, the United States gets hit with Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been really upset to see what's happening to the Jewish people at the hands of their own government. The book of Revelation tells us in no uncertain terms that the synagogue of Satan is not composed of Jews. And yet the Bible does call it a synagogue. And so clearly this is suggesting that there is a very close association with the Jewish people. And indeed, these people are Masonic. And people need to take a look at what Jerry Golden has written about the Masonic government of Israel.
Yes.
I have a link to Jerry's article at page 6 of my 2012 site, and it's just absolutely must reading for people to grasp these things.
The pictures are really, critical to understanding, too. His pictures showing all of the Masonic symbolism in government buildings, especially the court building, the Supreme Court building, is just you can't imagine it until you actually see it.
They're just filled with occult architecture.
Yes, absolutely.
Masonic architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And the design of all those buildings. The bottom line here is that the government of Israel is most obviously the synagogue of Satan that's described in the book of Revelation, and perhaps it would be said better to say that the government of Israel reports to the synagogue of Satan, because I think really the synagogue is something that's supranational, at least in respect to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So with this in mind, let me jump over to a field of thought that has been developing for some years now. Several years ago, at his website, World Watch Daily, Bill Koenig began to document just an amazing phenomenon. And his documentation showed that every time our government does something to castrate Israel along the lines of the Oslo Accords, that soon after there was a terrible retribution of the United States that followed very shortly in time. And I give a link to this, page 6 of my website. And the article written by Koenig is 10 major events related to the United States and Israel. And I think I'll just read briefly just a couple of these in order to give people the idea of what Bill Koenig is talking about. Number one, October 30, 1991, the perfect storm. As President George H.W. Bush is opening the Madrid-Spain conference to consider land for peace in Israel's Middle East role, the perfect storm develops in the North Atlantic, creating the largest waves ever recorded in that region. The storm travels 1,000 miles from east to west instead of the normal west to east pattern and crashes into the New England coast. 35-foot waves crash into the Kennebunkport home of President Bush.
Interesting.
So that came back to haunt him. Number two, August 23, 1992, Hurricane Andrew. When the Madrid conference moves to Washington, D.C., and the peace talks resume, Hurricane Andrew, the worst natural disaster ever to hit America, comes ashore and produces an estimated $30 billion in damage and leaving 180,000 homeless in Florida. And what Koenig does here in this article is he goes on to document 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in total instances of where our government has done things that ultimately will be extremely damaging to Israel. And then immediately in time after these events, some terrific natural disaster occurs. Hurricanes, floods, earthquakes, tornadoes, you know, just on and on. And looking at his article, I have to say that, well, I guess as a scientist, you'd say that the correlation coefficient is just absolutely stunning. You know, that's a mathematical way to describe whether or not one thing matches another, if there's a cause and response here. And really looking at Koenig's data, it's just absolutely stunning to see the extent to which retribution follows immediately any event where the United States is going after Israel to weaken it, to castrate it. And, you know, I'm really grateful that Bill Koenig has documented this for us. It's just stunning.
Well, we're told that those who bless Israel, God will bless.
Oh, yeah.
And those who curse Israel, God will curse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, you know, I have a different take on this than Mr. Koenig. You know, what I'm suggesting, and this is really speculative. I'll admit that. I don't have any hard data. But what I'm suggesting is that the planned artificial tribulation actually has the gall to stage this kind of theater and leave us to think that it's God doing this. The truth is that in the last couple of years there's been a lot published on the Internet, both last year and this year, which argues that it is not God who is at this time judging the nations. And so there are a lot of people who present some very powerful arguments that, no, we cannot conclude that God is punishing the United States with destruction as retribution for things that we're doing to Israel. And so if not, then who's doing this? Could this be the planned artificial tribulation that Alan Nunan was talking about?
I'm glad you raised that.
Are these coincidences being created by scalar warfare?
I'm glad you raised that line of thought, because the question that would pop into my mind is, as regards the nation of Israel, is if you view the government of Israel as a Masonic Kabbalist or whatever organization, then can you... Could you draw the conclusion then that God is creating taking this sort of action against America for doing things that weaken the nation of Israel? But
I think when God does start judging the world, we're going to know it.
Well, I think so. I think it'll be of greater magnitude than anything we've ever seen. So I'm glad you're stepping outside the box to take a view a different view of this, that perhaps this is part of the plan to make us believe that anytime we raise a finger against the nation of Israel, the geopolitical state, which is not to be confused with God's people, God's chosen people, that we're in trouble.
Important point.
Yeah, and that is an important way of considering things, and. I think because of the time constraints here, we're going to have to stop at that point and then just take up the issue of where this is all leading when we continue. Our guest is Dave Duncan. The website, the 2012 scam, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes at PIDradio.com. And we will continue tomorrow on PID Radio.
We'll conclude our three-part interview with Dave Duncan tomorrow night. And, of course, you can check out his website at thenewworldorderscam.com. Look for the link to the year 2012 scam. Or you can just do the easy thing and look for the show notes at PIDradio.com, and we'll have links to both of those pages right there.
Excellent. Well, you know what? There are people in the world who, they're just evil. And they're writing worms and viruses and stuff that are intended to harm your computer, and that's what's in the news today. Apparently there's a Yahoo messaging worm that installs a bogus browser.
Internet Explorer?
Yes, believe it or not.
No.
Oh, gosh. When the link is, apparently, instant messaging security company FaceTime Communications described the malware, M-A-L-W-A-R-Y-R-E, which is called Yahoo 32.explr.
Okay.
It describes this as insidious.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I like that guy that used to have the commercial.
Oh,
that would be
Lord.
Me.
Yes, Insidious.
Lord Insidious. When the link is clicked, a worm installs the so-called safety browser, a program that leads the users to pages mined with adware and viruses. And the safety browser uses an Internet Explorer logo to make it look more legitimate. And just one more thing: don't use Internet Explorer.
No. Firefox or Opera, if you're on Windows. If you're on Macs, of course, Safari is by far the fastest.
And by the way, if you ever go to WatcherMagazine.com and for whatever reason it just doesn't load right or look right, if you're using Internet Explorer, it probably is the browser. Try downloading Firefox.
Yeah, Mozilla.org.
You'll love it.
Yeah.
It's faster, it's leaner, it's up-to-date. Internet Explorer hasn't been updated for a while.
Yes, it is inexplicable that Microsoft has not updated Internet Explorer for quite some time. Supposedly, they've got some super-duper, getting ready somewhere in Redmond to
unveil. No, they haven't built enough back doors into it yet. That's why they haven't released it.
That's probably it. A couple of shout-outs. First, want to thank Chris, a listener who sent us a very nice note, said that listening to our show reminds him of listening to Howard Stern 20 years ago.
Honey, your hair's not nearly long enough.
On the weekend. I told her to, take 2 inches off,
and she did.
Yeah, no, I was using a different scale, I guess. So it's a little shorter than, I like it short, but I was kind of getting used to the long and, flowing. I'm not sure I'm ready for the Howard Stern look. What the guy from that band Slash from Guns N' Roses look that he's to cover up the fact that he's 85 years old. Chris, thank you for the compliment. We understand what you meant by that, and we're humbled by it. And we do appreciate
that.
We should mention too that Russ Dizdar was interviewed by another listener, the Snarky Avenger.
Excellent.
His podcast, yes, Snark Infested Waters is the podcast, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. The interview that Taylor did with Russ Dizdar was excellent, and he came up with an excellent idea. He may be podcasting Russ Dizdar's audio seminar on spiritual warfare over the summer.
That is a great idea.
Yeah, I wish I'd have thought of that. So do go back and check that out. And incidentally, just a little plug, I will be interviewed by the Snarky Avenger next week.
Oh.
Yes.
You're going to wear your, wig?
I'm going to wear armor because we'll be in there to promote, talk about Iron Dragons.
That's true. You know what? If you haven't taken a look at Iron Dragons, there's a free peek at the first chapter.
Mm-hmm. And as we've mentioned before, if you have a blog of your own and you're willing to give a review, an honest review, we're not asking for false praise here, an honest review of Iron Dragons, I'll send you a PDF copy of the book free of charge for you to read and then review.
Yeah. And for those of you who keep asking, the follow-ups to Armageddon Strain and Winds of Evil are being finished up, and we'll have those out as soon as possible. It's kind of tough, honestly. It's kind of tough for me to get everything packed into a day that I want to do.
Especially when you've got a five-month-old puppy who's gnawing on one of your hands.
And on my shoes. well, I think that's enough.
Yeah, I agree. Tomorrow night, we conclude our three-part interview with Dave Duncan. And then Dave Week continues Thursday with David Flynn. And he will talk about some of the prophetic connections between secret societies, ancient history, and geology, geography. It's going to really be mind-expanding.
It is, as all of these interviews have been. And then, of course, on Monday and probably as well on Tuesday of next week, in honor of Memorial Day, we're going to have on Captain Eric May.
Yeah, he's got some information that he wants to share regarding the upcoming 6/6/06 date. And some things that we might want to watch out for just to, not be panicky, but just to be on the safe side.
Yeah, and because of the date, I think it does fit into prophecy, the prophecy series pretty well, but he's going to be going into other things as well. And we hope that we'll be able to chat with him about the Battle of Baghdad.
Yeah, we'll do that on Memorial Day for sure. Apparently more of our soldiers fell there than has been admitted by the government, according to Captain May, I should say. And so we will talk to him about that. And that leads into his explanation of why he chose to name his cyber intelligence unit the Ghost Troop.
Yeah, that'll be great. Well, in the meanwhile, we'll be with you tomorrow. And until then, I'm going to remain Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thank you for listening to PID Radio.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud.